hell you?
Globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
We travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, lepo pozdravljeni v južni hemisferi. Danes o dogodku, na katerega se je dolgo, dolgo čakalo, se ga pričakovalo, nikakor dočakalo, danes pa vendarle se riše obrisi prvemu resnejšemu zoprstavljenju ekonomskemu redu, Washingtonskemu konsenzusu, torej redu, ki ga Združene države Amerike, seveda tudi dobršen del preostalega zahoda, izvršuje prek predvsem mednarodnega denarnega sklada, pa tudi Svetovne banke, dveh institucij, ki naj bi poskrbele seveda za zmanjšanje revščine, globalne revščine in pa za razvoj držav. Kdo se bo zoprstavil temu ekonomskemu redu? Seveda ne tisti, ki bi si to najbolj želeli, recimo skupina 77, G77, torej skupina že pred mnogimi desetletji ustanovljena seveda na račun Jugoslavije kot ustanovne članice, podobna skupina kot skupina neuvrščenih, skupina, ki se je pogajala za dostojno obravnavo predvsem v oziru do trgovanja, do gospodarstva, do razvoja znotraj Združenih narodov. Seveda, navkljub željam, da bi se razvoj seveda odvijal, razvijal, ne, skupina ne šteje manj držav kot v času vzpostavitve, temveč več, ne, danes jih je 133 med državami v naši bližini, pa ostaja njeni članica zgolj še Bosna in Hercegovina. Ampak vendarle, k vprašanju zoprestavljanju Washingtonskemu konsenzu, vzpostavlja se nova banka in pa še nova rezerva, dve instituciji, ki se bosta zoprstavila, ena zgledujoč po Svetovni banki, druga po Mednarodnem denarnem skladu. To so dve instituciji, ki jih vzpostavlja skupina BRICS, torej države Brazilija, Rusija, Indija, Kitajska in Južnoafriška republika. Za začetek pa seveda, če tudi je že dokaj jasno, pa vendarle kratek opis tega, kako uspešni sta bili Svetovni banki in pa Mednarodni denarni sklad v vzpostavljanju ekonomskega reda, tudi v oziru do njenih zamišljenih načel. O tem Samir Dosani iz človekoljubne mednarodne organizacije Action Aid.
So when we talk about the failures of the World Bank and the IMF, we have to talk about it on two levels. If we judge them according to their rhetoric, that they have been there to promote growth and end poverty, of course it's a failure. But if we judge them on what we think they're actually doing, which is to assert U.S. strategic interests in the world, they've been a very successful instrument of U.S. Corporate power, especially, or U.S. state power rather, especially the International Monetary Fund. So what happens is, as you know, the IMF would go into a country that's having a debt crisis. The debt crisis oftentimes has nothing to do with actually the country's economy. It's caused by investors or by a currency spike or by an oil crisis or whatever it may be. The IMF will go in, will bail the country out on the condition that the country follow a certain package. And that package is trade liberalization policies, fiscal liberalization policies, so you liberalize your currency, privatization of state assets. So whatever the government has, it has to sell over. And of course, the big issue in Europe right now, budget austerity. This has been proven to be a package for disaster. In fact, you know, I think the clinching argument is, show me one country that has actually done well with this set of policies. You know, if I'm having a debate with someone from the International Monetary Fund, I'll often ask this question. And they cannot give me even one answer of a country in which the IMF has done, has had a lot of influence, that has done very well as a result of these policies. So yes, when we talk about poverty, when we talk about human rights, when we talk about even economic growth, the policies of the International Monetary Fund have been a disaster.
Vloga nove banke, ki jo ustanavlja skupina držav BRICS, ni vzpostavitev novega ekonomskega reda, seveda. Gre zgolj za to, da omogočijo enak razvojni model svojim državam in pa v primeru optimističnih pogledov na razvoj te banke, tudi za razvoj kakšne od držav skupine 77. O razvojnem modelu Zahoda in pa temu, kako sta Svetovna banka in pa Mednarodni denarni sklad preprečevale vzpostavitev enakega modela za razvijajoči se svet, nadaljuje Samir Dosani.
So on the one hand, you know, there's a development model that say the US has gone through or say Germany has gone through, okay, which is not a perfect development model. I'm not calling it a great development model, but it involves a huge role of the state. Okay, in the case of the US, let's talk about the US because people tend to know the US quite well. You have a massive military budget, for example, that is propping up all kinds of corporations, Lockheed, Boeing, I mean, most of the Raytheon, most of the big companies you've heard of in the US are probably connected with what we call the military-industrial complex in some way, shape, or form, right? So this is a huge government-sponsored bubble, which is really, it's kind of the only dynamic sector in the U.S. economy left. I think they've devastated their pharmaceutical sector. So there's really only one or two dynamic sectors in the U.S. economy, and they're all state-sponsored in a massive way. Okay, we could do the same assessment for Germany. We could do the same assessment for almost every developed country. So that's not a great model. But it's a state model that is about using government money to increase employment, to increase profits for some domestic companies and so on. So if we ask the question, will the BRICS bank possibly help countries along that path? I think the answer would be yes. Right? Because what the World Bank has done is to say, okay, you can't be like the US. You have to continue to export gold, diamond, copper, raw materials ad infinitum, forever. And you know, somehow out of this, you'll suddenly become a developed country. Well, that's not going to work. That's not how development works. We all know that. So if we ask the question, okay, is this going to be good for development in that sense, in the U.S. sense or in the German sense? I think the answer is maybe, possibly. At least the door is open. If we ask the question, is it going to be good for indigenous people? If we ask the question, is it going to be good for the so-called victims of development, people who have to move, poor rural communities who may be out of a job because the land has been taken over and so on. I'm much more skeptical there. I don't think a new development model is being proposed here. I don't think we have a sort of a Gandhian economic model or something that's being proposed by the BRICS countries. I think it's a very traditional economic model, which will have winners and losers. But, you know, my hope is that there'll also be some policies to provide a kind of a safety net for the losers at the very least, or some encouragement for countries to develop those policies at the national level.
Razvojna banka držav BRICS bo imela uvodnih 50 milijard dolarjev na računu, v nekaj letih naj bi se ta znesek zvišil na 350 milijard. Kakšen pa je prvi oris te banke, kaj se ve v njej, kako bo delovala?
I mean, I would say I'm optimistic, but there are signs that are not encouraging as well. So let's talk about that. So first of all, I think when we talk about BRICS, we have to talk about other developing country formations as well. So the BRICS is sort of this formation of bigger countries, but you also have things like the G77, a group of the 77 of the world's poorest countries that negotiates together on trade issues, that negotiates together in the United Nations, together with China in the United Nations space. And these are countries that have been sort of opposing Washington consensus policies more and more vocally as time has gone on, right? So BRICS is coming out of that, and BRICS countries themselves have been quite vocal in their opposition to some of these policies. Unfortunately, you know, when we ask what concrete steps they could take, they're not taking some of those steps. the one thing they could do if you're going to start a new bank, one problem with the international system is that it's overly reliant on the US dollar. So it's a pity that the BRICS Bank, as it's currently, as I read the articles of incorporation of the BRICS Bank, it looks like it's going to make loans in US dollars. The holdings will certainly be in US dollars. So this is a problem. The same for the Contingency Reserve Agreement, the alternative IMF. In some ways, it's reinforcing the role of the US dollar in the world trading system when it really didn't have to. They could have picked any other currency or a basket of currencies, a mix of currencies to do this. So that's one problematic aspect. There's another problematic aspect in that in order to access the alternative IMF proposal, the Contingency Reserve Agreement, you can access up to 30% of whatever you're allowed without having a program with the IMF. But after 30%, you have to have an IMF program in place in order to access more money. And when we questioned officials about that, they said, look, we don't have the capacity. We're not building a think tank here. We can't be the ones to do the due diligence. We'll have to trust the IMF to do the due diligence, which is a pity because these are countries that have all had either minor problems or major problems with the IMF over the years. But still, I mean, even in a worst case scenario, to have two institutions that look like the IMF or two institutions that look like the World Bank rather than one, it's probably a step forward. It's probably a little bit better than the world in which we currently live.
Torej, poleg nove razvojne banke se vzpostavlja še tako imenovan Contingent Reserve Arrangement, torej rezervni fond, ki bi se zoprestavil mahinacijam, kakršne so se godile v drugi polovici 90-ih, mislim, da okoli 96-ga, z zlomom azijskih tigrov. Nekaj problemov je, v prvi vrsti, kar se tiče nove razvojne banke, to, da bo nakljub napovedim pred že nekaj leti, da bodo države BRICS vzpostavile neko novo valuto, ta banka uporabljala dolar, ker nekaj ekonomistov je opozorilo, da zna to imeti škodljive posledice, predvsem v oziru do prejšnji teden sodne odločitve v New Yorku, ki je zagotovila tem tako imenovanim mrhovinarskim skladom, da na kolena spravijo Argentino. V oziru do njenega dolga, ki so se ga nabrali že pred mnogimi desetletji, še predno so temu mrhovinarski skladi sploh obstajali. No, ne glede na to, Samir meni, da v primeru tovrstne banke takšnih strahov, da bi torej lahko ameriška jurisdikcija svojo voljo tudi prek svojih, oziroma da bi ameriška država svojo voljo tudi prek svoje pravosodne oblasti lahko uveljavljala ni. Nadaljuje Samir.
So say, in the case of Argentina, because you had a hedge fund, you had a vulture fund that had lent money, not even lent money to Argentina, lent money to someone who had lent money or bought some Argentine debt basically at a discount. They were able to then litigate in New York. These are problems, the World Bank doesn't have this problem, of course, because in their articles of incorporation, it basically says they can't be taken to court anywhere in the world. The BRICS Bank doesn't have that clause in their articles of incorporation, but I don't think it's a comparable situation when you have five countries working together to create a multilateral institution. I don't think they would necessarily. I don't think anyone could just buy their bonds. I don't think companies could buy their bonds. Only countries could buy their bonds or the stocks. And therefore, they won't have these kind of problems. No, they could not be taken to court in that way, the way that Argentina was.
Ni še povsem jasna zasnova te nove razvojne banke, na kateri govorijo o tem, da se bo zgledovala po brazilski razvojni banki, ki je namenjena predvsem privatnemu sektorju. Kako se je ta razvojna banka izkazala, za kakšno se je izkazala, kakšen vpliv je imela na okolje, v katerem je delovala in pa ali bo res to nek model, po katerem se bo zgledovala BRICS-ova razvojna banka, več Samir.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a given that it's going to follow the BNDES model. BNDES is the name of the Brazilian Development Bank. It's certainly possible. It's one of the models that is still there. I think these questions are still being determined. But yes, when we look at BNDES internally, I think it depends who you ask. I think if you ask most middle-class Brazilians, they will give a relatively positive picture of BNDES as an institution that has helped development, that has invested in some places, and so on. And if you ask rich Brazilians, they'll give you a very positive assessment of the BNDES, because they're the ones who largely get the contract. BNDES, of course, works only with private sector. They only work with companies. So really, it's not like the World Bank. It's like the International Finance Corporation, the IFC, which is the private sector arm of the World Bank. So this is something that will only give money to companies. And of course, rich Brazilians are quite happy with it. The people who are not happy with it are poor and marginalized and displaced people, indigenous people, people who have often been the victim of development policies that have been forced to move as a result of big hydropower projects, or because of forest clearing, or because of roads coming through, and so on. So that's the picture inside Brazil. It's mixed, I would say, but certainly for poor people, it hasn't been great. The picture outside Brazil, of course, is worse, because when you have a Brazilian institution operating inside the country, okay, yeah, there are winners and losers, but the winners and losers are all Brazilian, I guess. Both the winners and the losers are Brazilian. But now, when you have that same institution operating in Ecuador, in Guatemala, in Chile, in Africa, in Mozambique, in Angola, well, now the winners are tending to be Brazilians and Brazilian companies, and the losers are Mozambicans, Ecuadorians, and so on. So the same institution, domestically, I think you can say, okay, it's mixed, but generally okay. But externally, people don't have a very positive assessment of it at all.
Nova razvojna banka naj bi bila neka paralelna institucija, ki naj bi konkurirala in zmanjšala moč Svetovne banke. Kot prej omenjeni že contingent reserve arrangement pa naj bi se zoprstavil mednarodnemu denarnemu skladu. Še nekaj besed v tej novo nastajajoči finančni ustanovi.
The new development bank is modeled, they say it's modeled on the World Bank. We've talked about another model for that, which is the BNDES, the Brazilian Development Bank. There may be other models that are considered, but it's basically going to have a project funding mechanism. It's going to have a headquarters in Shanghai. It'll have an office in Johannesburg as well. They're calling it the Southern Africa Regional Office. it's a traditional development bank, a policy bank, very, very straightforward. The CRA, the Contingency Reserve Agreement, is a bit different. It is an alternative to the IMF, yes, but it won't have any staff. It won't have any. It won't be formalized in that way necessarily. It'll just be that the country sort of keeps some money in reserve, a certain pocket. I think it's 10 billion each in the first round. So every country keeps 10 billion aside, and if any country wants to access a pool of money, so that collective pool of 50 billion, they just write an application. And assuming that it goes through certain procedures, that will be approved. So this is a mechanism to access, and the use of it, of course, is to protect yourself against short-term currency fluctuations. So this is a mechanism, say, for example, as is happening right now in Ghana, the CD in Ghana, which is the Ghanaian currency, is for some reason, I'm not quite sure what the analysts are saying, but for some reason it's losing a lot of value against the dollar. Well, in order to buck yourself up, you borrow some money in the short term, the idea being that when your currency rebounds, when your currency gets stronger, you'll pay that off. So it's exactly the role that the IMF is supposed to play in the world, but without the conditions, unfortunately, without the conditions point, it's only until 30%, as I said earlier.
Skratka, spostavljata se dve novi instituciji, ki naj bi parirali svetovnemu denarnemu skladu in pa mednarodnemu denarnemu skladu in Svetovni banki. Ali gre za institucije, ki naj bi obstajale paralelno ob tej, ali gre za prvo konkretno dejanje v smeri prisile, da bi se ti institucije vendarle spremenile in vključile na bolj demokratičen način tudi države, ki do zdaj niso, ne glede na svojo gospodarsko moč, imele dovolj glasu v Svetovni banki in mednarodnem denarnem skladu.
If we look at the original demand or the original BRICS countries demand, in fact it was the G20 demand, so all the BRICS countries are also members of the group of 20 of the wealthiest countries in the world, and what these countries had demanded back in 2008 was a greater voice in global institutions such as the World Bank and the IMF. That means they wanted more voting share. And I think the whole reason that we're here discussing this right now is because that demand, which ostensibly was made in that demand, which ostensibly was agreed in 2008, was never granted by the U.S. and by the other Western powers. So this is the problem. So because they never agreed to the reform completely, that's why we're discussing parallel institutions. To answer your question about whether these countries are still asking for reform and more voting power in these institutions, absolutely they still are. They put that in every communique, in every document they write, they put those demands, they repeat those demands. How serious they are about it now, I don't know. Because look, the IMF is less influential than it was in most places in the world, including, I think, in Europe. Slowly it's losing its influence in Europe. Or maybe it's being overshadowed by the ECB, I'm not sure, you can tell me. But in other parts of the world as well, it's just not as powerful as it used to be, neither is the World Bank. So I think they're putting this in just as kind of a, you know, we haven't forgotten about this agenda. But I think they have a new agenda as well, which is to create parallel institutions.
Pojavlja se vprašanje, ali gre v tem primeru za antiimperialistični korak, ali gre za subimperialistični korak. Kakšno vlogo bodo imele nove institucije v svetu? V 20. stoletju smo poznali prvi, drugi, tretji svet, kaj se riše. V 21. stoletju in seveda predvsem v odnosu do teh dveh novo nastajujočih finančnih institucij.
I think this is the real question. I mean, I think if the BRICS countries have to decide. I mean, are they on the side of the rich and powerful countries? Are they on the side of the G7 countries? You know, which is basically Europe and the US. Or are they on the side of humanity, on the side of the global majority, on the side that they have rhetorically that they have espoused solidarity with, which are one grouping of which is the G77. Another you mentioned is the non-aligned movement. We can also talk about spaces like the Bandung conference of 1955, which was, you know, voiced the solidarity between Asia and Africa. So this is really a choice, and it's not clear to me that they are making this choice. It seems to me that they are trying to have it both ways. They're trying to be nice to the rich countries and also be nice to the poor countries. But it's not going to work. They really do need to choose. They really do need to choose what their agenda is going to be. And they really need to cement the relations, and I hope they cement the relations with the right bloc. I would hope they cement the relations with the G77 countries.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, poslušali ste Južno hemisfero, v kateri smo predstavili nekaj novega. Ali gre za res? Prav zares za nekaj novega, ali gre zares za alternativo Washingtonskemu konsenzu, o tem seveda v prihodnosti. Lep pozdrav.
Globalization to a large extent is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet, they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you'll see what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno opoldan.